I click this button, we are on air. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson on Radio Edgy Talk, coming from, well, I was going to say a sunny Glasgow, but it's been quite a nice day today, but it's definitely dark now. I'm delighted today to have with me Bill Boyd, the literacy advisor. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, good evening, John. Hi.
Maybe before we actually ask you where you're coming from, just mention, because I've been tweeting a lot about it on Saturday. I was along at the Scottish Film and Learning Festival that you co-organised, and we'll go on to that in a wee while, but it was a fantastic event. I wonder, could you maybe just start off, and a lot of people who listen to this will probably know you, Bill, but just a bit of your background, where you come from, what do you do, and the like.
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah, I spent most of my career as a secondary English teacher, just over 30 years as a teacher. I was a deputy head teacher. Sorry, I was a head of department in a couple of schools, always within earshot. And then I was a deputy head at Prestwick Academy for 10 years. I went to what was then Learning and Teaching Scotland, and there's now Education Scotland, of course. I went there on secondment, for a 2-year secondment. And while I was there, I got a permanent job as a programme manager during the time of the development of Curriculum for Excellence. And interestingly enough, I wasn't working on literacy. I was actually programme manager for the Health and Wellbeing project, which I thoroughly enjoyed, I have to say. Met some really, really good people in there doing that job, but I decided after a couple of years of that I wanted to get back to my first love, as it were, which was the development of literacy and language and all that stuff. So I decided to cut out of there and just set up on my own and work for myself. And I, fortunately, by that time I was in a position to do that, because all my family had grown up through university and all the rest of it, so I was able to do it.
And yeah, well, a hint to your Twitter name is @literacy advisor, which probably tells it all. So basically, yeah. A consultant now, advising on literacy, you would say, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. I work with schools from time to time, both primary and secondary, probably more primary, actually. I guess there are more of them. But I also work in with other organisations, bodies, individuals, doing sometimes quite weird and wonderful things, really. I've done a wee bit of work with SQA on the Scottish Survey of Literacy and Numeracy, literacy, of course. The good thing, I suppose, is that I get to pick and choose what I do, really. Mm.
A labour of love now then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the blog. I mean, I try to keep the blog as up to date as possible. I don't write blog posts as often as I should, or as often as I used to. Maybe it's but the blog. I like to think the blog provides some useful resources and food for thought, if you like, for the teaching community.
I think it looks very valuable to me, and will maybe talk about some of the specific things there later. And this is kind of always interests me, because you're a consultant, so you go in and you work for people on a sort of contract basis, but your site gives all this stuff away for free.
Yeah, in terms of the stuff, I mean, a lot of it's curation, really. Mm-hmm. John, it's really just pulling things together from various sources, so I don't own it in a sense. Mm-hmm. I just gather it for teachers. I do a lot of pontificating on the blog, as I do in real life as well. Mm-hmm. and a lot of what I'm, if for want of a better word, what I'm selling to teachers and to schools is a bit of my, as I tell people, a bit of my brain, which is becoming smaller by the day, of course. There's less and less of it. But I suppose my experience over a long time in education really is what I'm selling, if I'm selling anything.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating that people can do this, you know, that you can provide resources still and feel comfortable and relaxed doing that as part of a a sort of wider role. Anyway, the thing that I went along on Saturday, as I said, to the Scottish Film and Learning Festival, and I wonder if maybe it was run by yourself and Rob Smith. And I wonder, could you just tell us how it started, what the idea was, and then we'll be going and talking a little bit more about.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things I used to love as a teacher, classroom teacher, was using a range of media in the classroom, especially film texts, and I've kind of carried that with me ever since. I did train at one time as a lead practitioner with what was then Scottish Screen, which is now part of Creative Scotland. I'm still a lead practitioner in moving image education with them, and still deliver quite a number of CPD training sessions, if you like, on film and moving image in the classroom. And through that love, I suppose, I came across Rob Smith's website a few years ago, and for those of you who are not familiar with Rob, Rob's site is called The Literacy Shed, and basically what Rob does is collect an amazing array of short films for use in the classroom. It's very carefully quality controlled. They're all of excellent quality, and he writes resources around the films, and the site is just wonderful. If you've never seen it, go and have a look. It's called The Literacy Shed. So Rob had done a couple of sessions in Scotland last year, and when I spoke to him, he said, do you fancy doing a joint thing? And I said, yeah, of course, I'd love to do that. So the joint thing became what we decided to call the Scottish Film and Learning Festival. Well, actually, we decided to call it the Scottish Film and Literacy Festival, and at some point it became the Scottish Film and Learning Festival. And to let you into a secret, Rob set up a website for the festival, and it was only two or three weeks after he'd done that I went in and realised he'd called it the Scottish Film and Learning Festival rather than Literacy. And when I said to him, he said, oh well, it's too late to change it. I paid money for that website, so it's staying. Which I also find quite interesting, because one of the recent blog posts I wrote was asking the question whether literacy and learning are actually just the same thing, which didn't get a huge response. I don't know if there's much interest in the topic or.
Do you want to just give us a wee sort of summary of that? Do you mean that all learning involves being literate in a different medium?
Yes, I do think that, and I mean I think the primary aim of learning and education is for us all to become more literate or more learned, I suppose, if you want to use it. I'm keen on this idea, which is I think is central to Curriculum for Excellence, the idea that as teachers we are all responsible for the development of literacy. It also says we're all responsible for the development of numeracy and health and well-being, of course, which I think is equally true. But I think that responsibility for the development of literacy skills, the ability to read, write, talk, listen, think critically, all of that stuff, I think is every teacher's primary responsibility. So I don't think there's a huge distinction between literacy and learning, to be perfectly honest with you.
And I guess speaking the language of different subjects, like you would speak maths or you would speak movement if you were a dancer or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you can express yourself through that and understand and read.
Sure, and I find it quite interesting that actually we seem to be, I mean, the term literacy seems to be acquiring more and more adjectives as we go. Emotional literacy, financial literacy, political literacy. People just keep adding them. Physical literacy, and I think the I would guess the end point of that is just to admit that literacy is really learning. It's the same thing.
And learning, understanding. And I guess that just points to the power of that word, literacy, which in its narrowest sense, I suppose, means reading and writing, but that a huge amount of more.
There's a quote I often use from an American literacy expert called James G. And he says, we never just read and write. We always read or write something. So that for me is saying, everybody would say that literacy is about reading and writing. Of course it is. But that doesn't take you very far, because you don't read and write in a vacuum. You talk about reading or writing something, and that something is text, which takes me to another important aspect of what I do, which is that examination of what we mean by text, if you like.
I mean, that was very interesting in the festival, because lots of people did that thing where they refer to films as text, which is pretty much hard coded into the curriculum for excellence, I think. Text are films and blog posts, of course, which is incredibly important. I guess podcasts are a text.
They are.
You know, so you've got all these different things that.
And do you know the interesting thing about podcasts is for those people who are familiar with the literacy documents and curriculum flexions, they'll know there's a list of suggested texts in that document. And I often use a slide where I've transformed a list, if you like, into a Wordle. If you're familiar with Wordle, the sort of visual display of text, if you like. And I say to people, these are what are regarded in curriculum for excellence as texts, and it doesn't just say books. I think there must be about 50 different kinds of text. And I said, I can't think of a text that isn't on the list. And of all the times I've done that in a presentation, I did it in one particular presentation, and somebody in the audience put their hand up and said, I can see something. I can't see something that's not there, but I recognise something that isn't there. And it was podcasts.
How could they miss out something?
How could they miss something so important
to me.
So literacy, absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, it kind of speaks to the power of that word literacy, and it also, I guess, gives you free rein to cut across domains. If you're talking about literacy and education, that you can talk about maths, and you can talk about, as everybody was doing at the weekend, about film.
So,
as I say, keep on popping back to this festival. So you decided what it was, and you organised it. I guess you just invited different people to come and speak.
We just invited different people. I mean, that task was down to me, I suppose, because I already had any number of connections, if you like, through my teaching experience and the number of teachers that I networked with, but also through the SQA connection and the Scottish Survey, which is an interesting sort of issue in itself, actually, that journey, if you like, to have moving image texts recognised in the survey as reading texts, which they are now. They're very much part of the reading survey, and that was a wee bit of a battle with the government, because for people who are maybe possibly a bit more traditional, dare I say it, of a traditional notion of education or literacy, that the idea that film texts should be part of reading rather than something called listening and talking or watching. But that was an important one for us, because we wanted these texts on a par with printed texts, and in the Scottish Survey they are on a par. I mean, there are fewer of them in the survey, but they have the same status as printed texts. So I had that connection with the SQA, if you like, and I also had the connection with a lot of the filmmakers and the film world through my associations with, as I said, what was formerly Scottish Screen, which was great. But that allowed me to to basically pull many of these people into the festival. So I took on that role of inviting the presenters, with a couple of exceptions of people that Rob knew.
Mm.
And Rob took on other roles, like the technical one, which he was much more prepared for or suited for, if you like, than I am. He's a lot more technically minded than I am. So he pulled together the website, the bookings, and all of that, the kind of practical stuff. And I think it worked pretty well. I mean, there were very few folk that I contacted who are not able to. One or two were not able to do it because of prior commitments, of course. But by and large, we got most of the big players, if you like, in the kind of film and education world in Scotland.
What impressed me was there was a huge range, because there was primary school teachers there, which, you know, I always like to see being a primary school teacher, and there was university lecturers, and there was people from various places in Europe that were and I've now, of course, forgotten, having just been listening to it again, the sort of the big European thing. What was it called?
The framework.
The framework, that's
it. The framework. This was a group who, coincidentally, some of them were coming over here this weekend for some other meetings or whatever, but some of them were heading over, so it was a nice coincidence that they were here. But one or two others, I think, came specifically for the festival. So we had nine people from across Europe, two from Finland, one from Sweden, one from Greece, Portugal, Spain, Ireland, and it was great to see them there. But these folk were all part of what's called FLAG, the Film and Literacy Advisory Group. And basically what they're trying to do in that group is they're trying to draw up a film and education framework which could apply across the whole of Europe, and within which education programs, if you like, could be situated. I think it's to try to get a kind of coordinated effort across Europe, really, to have more film education, not only in schools but just across the board.
Yeah, and I guess what was quite exciting, if you were Scottish, to see when they pulled up a big slide about the sort of the shape of the framework, that it looked quite familiar, quite a lot of it to us, in the sort of experiences and outcomes idea, and the not exactly the four capacities, but stuff that circled around that in a nice way.
Very much so, and I don't think that was accidental. I'm pretty sure that the Curriculum for Excellence framework will have informed that structure. Which is quite interesting, because, I mean, I have my own, this will not surprise you, I have my own views on Curriculum for Excellence and where we are with it, where we should be, and all the rest of it. And I think, I still think Curriculum for Excellence on paper is a terrific blueprint for the future of education in Scotland. Whether we are some way off implementing it, or whether we are just about to be knocked onto a completely different track, is, I suppose, a moot point. But I still think that framework it would be hard to beat if you were to start from scratch.
Yeah, and I think most people, even if you're struggling with it because of other pressures and other things, most people recognise that it's a really sound idea, and the root of it is really great. I think we're going to have to wait a wee while to see how it specs out, and maybe it's not surprising that changing a curriculum like that is, I imagine, it's a huge task, and we shouldn't really expect it to happen in a couple of years or
no, absolutely, John. I quite agree with you. I think if people's expectations had been more realistic at the outset, that this was a major shift in emphasis, if you like, and I think if if we had accepted that this was an evolutionary process, I know that people need to see change, but I think if we'd accepted it was an evolutionary process and had a more realistic timescale, then maybe we would have made. Ironically enough, I think when you do try to rush to implement something, it becomes more difficult and discredited to some extent. Oh, this is not working.
Yeah. I guess part of the reason for that isn't that this isn't just education, it goes right through society. Is so much is driven politically, and politicians need. Their turnaround is faster than that.
Five years.
Yeah, it's hard to save the cod if you've got a 5-year time span. You know, it's probably you've got to cut that. That's probably a different challenge. So, as I say, we went along to the festival, and I had just a great time, and I really appreciate the chance to get along. One of the reasons I like doing this podcasting stuff is because you get the chance to listen to and talk to really interesting people, and it's a fantastic opportunity. And what sort of struck me, again, this is going back to who you got, is that there was a lot of really good practical ideas, as well as things that, you know, you could see it could spin out over a very long time. There was people saying, well, here's a movie, you could use this, and some of the things I saw, if I was still in the classroom, I think I could have followed the URL, picked up the video, gone in and had a good lesson very quickly. And other ones were things that I was thinking, oh well, it just leaves a lot of thinking to be done as a practitioner. So I think it hit a lot of really good targets. And I say that that spread of people from inside schools, outside schools, colleges, universities was really, really super. And I don't know what I'm maybe ask you in a minute the takeaway for yourself, but I mean for me, one of the big takeaways was that this is something I could do. It was something that I needed. That, you know, if I was still teaching, I would kind of, it's important to address. And although I could start doing something, I've got a lot of learning to do around that.
Yeah, we did. I mean, and I should say thanks for coming along, John, and being with us and capturing some of the talks, many of which are now on your site, which is fantastic. I must actually go in and listen to some of them myself, because obviously I didn't get to hear all of them on the day. I heard bits and pieces of it. I tended to be flitting around from one seminar to another. But you're right, we did have that range. I mean, we had from a talk on Cinémathèque Française and what's happening in Europe and so on, fairly highbrow stuff, if you want to use that expression, to very, very simple practical ideas in the classroom. We wanted, I mean, I think both Rob and I wanted from the start to put on something that teachers in the main were going to come to. Okay, there were people there who weren't teachers, but by and large they were teachers. The teachers would come along to, and they would take away, as you say, loads of ideas, just buzzing with ideas to go, desperate to go back into their classrooms and try them out. Because that's what we felt it should be about. We didn't want, for instance, you'll notice we didn't have a big keynote speaker at the beginning, which you would normally get at a conference that size, you know, somebody speaking for maybe 40 minutes and inspiring us or whatever. We decided we wouldn't do that. We'd get straight into the presentation, seminars. We went for, I mean, we didn't really know whether to go for 10 or 12 seminars an hour each, or in the end we plumped it for, I think it was about 21 seminars, three streams of seven sessions, and three streams in each session of 30 to 35 minutes, which we felt was a kind of optimum time. It was probably just about the right number of presentations and the right length. And it did allow us to have a huge range of things there. When I was looking at the program, putting the final program together, I tried as far as possible where if I felt something was a bit more about theory rather than practice, I tried to balance them up so that if somebody was there, like, just for argument's sake, if somebody was there simply for practical classroom stuff, they could theoretically go through the whole day and only go into seminars that would give them practical classroom stuff. If somebody was more interested in listening to the, you know, the justification for filming the classroom or what was happening in Europe or the theories of film or whatever, then equally they could probably pick a path that would allow them to do that. So we're trying to get the balance, and I think we've made not a bad job of it.
Oh, I'd say I thought it was great, and that my main regret was that you can't be in two places at once, unfortunately. And you know, there's some things I think, oh, I wish I was going to. And David Gilmore, who was there, did a lot of recording for us as well, so we have actually got a 2 out of 3, I think, most of the way through.
Wow.
Which
that's quite impressive. Right?
It's quite useful.
And I would encourage people to go on your website and listen to even just bits of the presentations to get a flavour. You joked yourself that capturing a film conference on the radio was maybe not the most, maybe not the best. But I think the good thing about it is it does allow you to listen to the presenter without being distracted, if you like.
Yeah, well, actually, I think a lot of your people were talking were very good, because as I've been editing, I realised a lot of them talked through the film very well, so you can actually get quite a lot out of it. And bits that are just people listening to watching silent films, I've just edited those down a wee bit. And I guess yourself, your sort of talk covered a wee bit of the theory and a bit of the practical. You kind of went, I think, through it in a quite balanced way. And maybe we should come on to the thing that you were talking about, which was this 10 tools for reading film, I guess. Just the title is pointing to what we've been talking about tonight, is that you read film, and it's something that over the day a lot of people talked about, and I realised, and I've known it for a while, that I'm not that good at reading film. So it was really interesting to...
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, that came about, I suppose, because, first of all, when I set up the blog and so on, and I was going out and supporting schools and so on, one of the aspects of Curriculum for Excellence which kind of intrigued me a wee bit was that it says something in Curriculum for Excellence about tools for reading. There's a statement about tools for reading, about I can select a range of strategies for reading before I read and so on. But it doesn't actually tell you what they are. It doesn't suggest even what they are. And I think that was because if you Google reading strategies, you'll probably find a few million returns for your hit. And you pays your money and you take your reading strategies, as they say. But what I wanted to try to do for my own satisfaction was to sit down and see if I could work out the key strategies or things that we do as sophisticated readers when we read a sophisticated text. So we're not talking about phonics here or learning to read. I leave that to other more qualified people. But I'm talking about developing fluent, comprehending readers, you know, who go beyond the sort of simply reading the text or saying the text, to actually understanding, reading between the lines, reading inference and so on. And what is it that we do as adults or sophisticated readers? And it was things like making predictions, for example. You know, when you read a title, or when you read the opening sentence of a text, or when you look at the opening shots of a film or whatever, that you're immediately in the business of making predictions about it. And these predictions you're making, they're based on partly on previous experience and personal knowledge, but they're also based on other clues in and around the text. So actually teasing out these strategies and teaching kids how to do them better, if you like, was the aim of that, I suppose. So when I started looking at film, and looking at these reading strategies and asking the question, do the same strategies apply to film as they would to a printed text? And that, the simple answer was yes. But of course, a film has got more elements than a printed text. It's got a sound element for a start. So the seven strategies became 10 tools, effectively. Mm. But I was also borrowing, that's a nice word for stealing, isn't it? I was also borrowing from other sources and research and so on, and particularly a lot of the work of the British Film Institute and some of the materials they used to sell to schools in terms of their what they would do with their little film text and how they would interrogate the text and so on. So it's a kind of amalgamation of tools and ways of reading that led to the 10 tools. Incidentally, the 10 tools are not a secret. They're free. You can download them from my Literacy Advisor website. As I was explaining in the seminar, these strategies are roots into a text. They're roots into the text. They're not teaching the text as a teacher's role, but they are actually ways into the text, which actually, in many instances, would be the way that people would kind of naturally fall into the text anyway, but with a wee bit more guidance and support, if you like. I don't know if I'm all that keen on the term, but this notion of ownership, it's about giving the learner ownership of the text, so that the questions, for example, the questions they come up with in the text are their questions. The analogy I often use is that as a classroom teacher 20, 30 years ago, if I was teaching a poem or a play or a prose extract or whatever, very often, like most teachers, what I would do is I would provide the text, we would read and discuss the text as a group, and I would provide 10 questions on the text, so the class would go away and discuss them or write answers to them or whatever. But they were my 10 questions on the text. Yeah. And the questions were already reading that text in a particular way. My way.
Yeah.
Whereas if the kids come up with the questions in the first place, then they're more likely, I would suggest, they're more motivated collectively to seek the answers because they're real questions. Mm. Yeah, they're not artificial. So the questioning strategy, which is one of the 10 tools, is all about that. It's all about transferring that responsibility for learning, if you like, to the learner.
Mm. I mean, what I like about them when I'm reading through them, and as I say, this is coming from somebody who's not, I don't think, I've watched quite a lot of movies, but I don't think I'm properly literate in films, is this kind of makes aloud what you should be, or a ways of thinking about film. It's sort of, I don't know if I'm saying that the right way, but they definitely are tools to think about, and it kind of makes maybe visible what people who do understand film are doing when they watch a film. And some of them are, I mean, you know, the prediction thing, probably everybody does that when they go to film, but other ones, when you're digging in and thinking about, you know, what the picture in the film is, freeze frames and all this sort of thing is, it gives you tools that film literate people have.
I appreciate that, but they're also very much for teachers and young folk tackling film texts, even for the first time. I mean,
yeah,
nobody's tackling film texts for the first time, but you know what I mean, in a formal kind of setting.
Yeah.
So that they're very simple. I mean, they're not rocket science. They're very simple, but it does give you the beginnings of a development of a film language. Even just terms like shots and sequence and camera point of view, camera angle, that kind of thing. They are nice and simple, and most people recognise them when they when you see them, it won't come as a huge surprise. The other thing I should stress about the whole business of film in the classroom, for me, this is not necessarily for everybody, but it's about using short films. You know, it's not about feature film.
Mm.
And I mean, feature films is maybe the form of film that we're most familiar with, although I dare say YouTube and Vimeo and so on are changing that nowadays, and the fact that people are making their own films is changing the whole perception of it. But this is very much about short films, and Rob's Literacy Shed website is about short film. You're talking about films of anything between 30 seconds and 10 minutes. I mean, some of the films that Rob was using on Saturday were about a minute and a half long, and absolutely just rich, completely rich in content. It's a bit like using poetry in the classroom, I think. You know, the amount of material and thought and discussion and so on you can get from a very short poem sometimes. I think often short films are like that. They're so just condensed, full of goodness.
Certainly I think that was a theme that a lot of people picked up on, that told Rob, and I think the David Griffin.
David Griffith, yeah, David's a filmmaker and lecturer at Strathclyde Uni.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, he was talking about, comparing the sort of grammar or structure of film to the structure of language in a really sort of interesting way for the audience, I think.
Absolutely. David is just fantastic at that, making that connection between the film and language and, as you say, structures and so on, and that kind of relationship between the structure of a film and the structure of other kinds of text. But that, I think that was also, this is an important point about film, and it was an important aspect of the festival, and Rob again is particularly good at this, and that is that you're kind of dispelling this notion that you're either in a classroom, you're either very much about traditional skills, reading, writing, grammar, spelling, punctuation, or you're about using films and looking at films and enjoying films and all the rest of it, and therefore you are progressive. I don't buy that, actually, that dichotomy at all, because I think Rob and any number of others on Saturday demonstrated quite ably that actually through using film as the medium, as the text, then you can have potentially much more success in teaching kids about grammar, language, structure, storytelling, writing, and so on. So it's not that we are promoting film as an alternative to books or an alternative to grammar, heaven forbid, but actually that using film as a regular text in the classroom and as a medium, you can actually have a lot more success in developing, for want of a better expression, traditional literacies.
I think a lot of people made that very clear, and that was one of the most interesting things. I think there were really some practical ideas for transferring from watching a film to writing, for instance, and all the rest of it. People talked about how motivating it was that, you know, you can use a short film or a wee bit of video that would really get the children concentrating on that, and then they could use that concentration to transfer to writing. And I certainly used to always feel when I was in the class, podcasting was kind of this stealth teaching, because the children were really enthusiastic about it.
They don't think they're working.
Yeah. They don't realise they're actually talking, listening, reading and writing, because they think they're doing something different. You know.
Whereas if you introduced it by saying, right, kids, this is now going to be literacy hour.
Yeah.
It's a totally different effect.
Yeah. And one of the speakers, one of the early ones, Sarah Wright, was talking about just that hook to get children into the start of a lesson by using film and video in a very, very short way, teachers creating things and stuff, which I thought was quite interesting too. I realise I probably said something about running for about half an hour, 40 minutes ago.
You did.
As usual, I lied.
Your listeners have already switched off.
No, we trick you on for longer. That's the thing. We get in with a promise of letting you off after half an hour and pull you down. But I mean, it's been really interesting talking to you, and I think we could probably dig into this. And I would recommend people go to your site, and a pile of links on EduTalk, actually, to various people who have been trying to sort of curate the links that people were talking. So there's a lot of stuff for people to follow up. And I think it's just it's a really valuable thing, and the work you're doing is really useful. Is there anything you'd want to finish off, or have you said enough for where
I was? I think I've probably said enough for now. Yeah. No, other than have a look at, have a listen to some of the talks on the EduTalk website, just to get a flavour of what was happening. Go and find the 10 tools for reading film for yourself. Download a copy, have a look at it if it's of any use or interest to you in your own classroom practice, and go and have a look at Rob's Literacy Shed if you're looking for short films. Because one of the things often for teachers is that they say is, I'd like to be doing this, I'd love to do more of this, but where on earth do I get the film? And the Literacy Shed is certainly one very good source of film.
Yeah, but that's I guess an awful lot in education now with the internet is managing to sieve out the bits that are actually going to be useful in this lifetime. There's so many in the number of films, but if you've got a good wee set there to start with, that sounds great. So we'll have the links to this in the show notes with the blog. You are at Literacy Advisor on Twitter, and your website is literacyadvisor.wordpress.com.
Yes, so you'll get it if you go to www.literacyadvisor.scot.
Oh, that's even better. It's an easier one to remember. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see the dot scot starting to appear here and there. So can I just say, Bill, thanks very much for taking the time, for coming on and sharing. And I'm going to hang up now, folks. So good night.